On this episode of the podcast, I'm talking about what everybody's talking about. The federal indictment of the former Illinois Speaker of the House and one of the most powerful men in the history of Illinois politics, Michael Joseph Madigan Jr. We'll also touch on a little bit of Lori Lightfoot. I will touch on a little bit of Lori Lightfoot, or a lot, depending on your perspective. All right. We'll see you on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to the Chicago Journal Podcast. My name is Craig Walker and I am your host. To learn more about us, please visit our website at chicagojournal.com. The Chicago Journal Podcast is presented by Challenge Media.
Something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm gonna stay in this town. I'm gonna live in this town. I'm gonna live in Chicago, the greatest place around.
Well, hi, I'm Boss Mike Madigan of Madigan's Machine Shop. Now, I know what you're thinking, and the answer is no. There's no relations between me and the former Illinois Speaker of the House. The only one who can call me the Velvet Hammer is my wife. Now, I am also aware of what you are probably wondering, and the answer is yes. It is a coincidence my nickname is Boss. Since the time I was a young man, my friends gave it to me long ago when me and them really wanted the prettiest girl at our high school to be elected prom queen, so she could join our friend Tommy in the homecoming court. What we did was... Well, we should probably move on. Now, I also suppose that you are likely to find it curious that my profession as a machine specialist just so happens to be, admittedly eerie but entirely coincidental, as a general term, could metaphorically encompass that which could best be described as, allegedly, the wholly corrupt political activities of the Democratic political party in the state of Illinois, of which the former Illinois Speaker of the House was most certainly the leader of for the last half century. Now I assure you, on my father's grave, that Boss Mike Madigan's machine shop is always, has always, and always will be on the up and up, and that we have nothing to do with any corruption and dirty dealings like the former Illinois Speaker of the House. Allegedly. When I first opened the doors on Boss Mike Madigan's machine shop way back in 1971, 50 years we've been in business. What? Really? That's the same year. Really? That's the same year that Mr. Michael Madigan first went to Springfield. Really? Tommy, you think I need to change my name? Well, folks, I don't know. There's a possibility we need to figure out something different here, as there's a possibility this is the reason why business has been so slow. But in the meantime, until we do, come on down to Boss Mike Madigan's machine shop, where it ain't fixed until it's fixed. Oh, shucks. We're gonna need to rewrite the slogan, too. Hi, I'm Craig Walker, and I'm here today to talk to you about nostalgia. Nostalgia is a newly discovered pharmaceutical with unique properties that stimulates the brain's neurotransmitters more gently than the typical pharmaceutical. This alternative appeals to people who have tried many other medications, but maybe they've been met with limited success or have experienced difficult side effects. We offer hope to people who no longer believe it exists with a new alternative that takes a gentler approach to balancing the brain's chemicals. Please see important facts about nostalgia, including who should not receive nostalgia. Nostalgia is not for everyone, and individual results may vary. Side effects of nostalgia are uncommon, but may include headache, nausea, vomiting, dizziness, vaginal ejaculations, dysentery, cardiac arrhythmia, thoughts of suicide, mild heart explosions, varicose veins, darkened stool, darkened soul, death,
lycanthropy, trucanthropy, more vomiting, arteriosclerosis, hemorrhoids, diabetes, atheism, religious fanaticism, narcissism, Machiavellianism, Marxism, paranoia, loss of virginity, mild discomfort, entropy, vampirism, gender impermanence, hysteria, spontaneous dental hydroplosion, sugar high, even more vomiting, your mom, and mild rash. Ask your doctor or other healthcare professional to see if nostalgia is right for you. All right. Welcome back. As you may know, my name is Craig Walker, and I am your host. I am the founder and president of Challenge Media, and I am the editor and publisher of the Chicago Journal. And before we get into everything else, I wanted to get out some a little bit of housekeeping stuff out of the way. First, of course, I want to say thank you so much for downloading and listening. As I always say, I know you don't have to, and I know that it's easy to skip past podcasts, especially names you don't recognize. And to you that are here, I sincerely appreciate you taking some of your time to get to know me and get to know the show and our website. Speaking of our website, you can find it at chicagojournal.com. You'll be able to find everything we do there, and you'll be able to subscribe and support in the best way possible. You'll also be able to find all our social media accounts and Twitter and Facebook, which you can easily find at Chicago Journal. No spaces for both. But what I really want to get into, the opinion and comment stuff that we've done here these first few, are going to be going a little bit away. Well, not forever. We're still going to do like little special edition things like this, but I'm going to try, and I think it's better to push those to personal podcasts for more personal accounts. I do have a podcast where I go through a newsletter to friends and family. Under my own name, under Craig Walker. You can find it everywhere. I think that's better for some of these more long-form podcasts. I still think my Chicago ones are going to find a home here probably eventually. But I did want to have some more content under the podcast umbrella. So there's going to be a little bit more news and news stories. I've never been a great news reader. I always have my voice, and I can't do the... My emotion comes through. I can't help it. But at the same time, I was doing it with somebody else and our friend, and they said they kind of liked the perspective that it took. And obviously, media is changing, and it. Who knows? We're gonna give it a try for a little while, and we'll see how it goes. So we are going to be putting together some shorter podcasts with news updates. I think the name Chicago Journal will be better kept separate rather than doing strictly opinion and comment. Although I do love the journal half of the name, and I think that's important to our identity as a business, as a publication. The main thing is putting out some more content, because obviously we're such a small independent outlet, and we can't. It's tough to compete. But as always, we are looking for advertisers. We know we're a newcomer to the market, but we'd love to have you and your business consider working with us. We don't care if you're a large multinational corporation competing in the global marketplace, or you're a small family-owned mom-and-pop shop, local pizza place, etc. No business is too big or too small, and we encourage you to get in touch and reach out to us. You can find us at advertise@chicagojournal.com. You can email advertise@chicagojournal.com. Yeah, that's really it. I just wanted to set that expectation for you guys, so we're not waiting months and months and months to get back on the microphone and maybe have a little bit more fun, put out some more things, and hopefully grab some more attention on your feeds. Because we do, you know, hope to one day dream about doing this full time. Not getting rich, we know that's not going to happen, but we would like to dream about doing stuff full time and leaving our day jobs. Yeah, but well, maybe someday. Let's take one more quick break here and we will get into it. All right, so years ago, if you had told me that the week that Michael Joseph Madigan Jr. was federally indicted, officially federally indicted for racketeering charges, bribery, wire fraud, and attempted extortion, If you had told me that there would be somebody in the city of Chicago who would come this close to stealing those headlines, I would have laughed in your stupid face. I'm not kidding you. I would have laughed in your stupid face. How do I explain this? The federal indictment of Michael Joseph Madigan should have been, and well, it probably will be the story of the year. Okay, it's. I mean, I can't. Even today, I can't think of anything really, at least on the local level, topping the federal indictment of Michael Joseph Madigan, especially in an election year. But, and that's a big but. First reported by Greg Pratt over at the Tribune, what Mayor Lightfoot said, it almost toppled Madigan's indictment for the week. More people talked about that than the longest serving United States legislator in history, United States history. This federal indictment in the state of Illinois. Mike Madigan has been a cloud over the state of Illinois for 50 years, and Mayor Lightfoot, just in one deposition, no, I'm sorry, in one quote pulled from a random lawsuit with a lawyer from the Chicago Park District, almost stole the Madigan indictment headlines. Is unreal. I never in a million years. Listen, say what you want about Lori Lightfoot, okay? And God knows I have. I have said some of the worst things about Lori Lightfoot, and I've written them and I've published them on my web, on this website, on the chicagojournal.com. And I gotta hand it to her. I mean, when I first heard it, I said, come again? I mean, say what you want about Lori, but she's never been soft, okay? Listen, it's hard being a woman. Listen, politicians, some speak softly, some carry a big stick. Listen, okay, it's not the size of the fight and the dog. Wait, no, it's not the size of the dog and the fight. It's the size of the fight and the dog. All right. So I'm going to read the quote. I'm going to read what she said this week. Mayor Lori Lightfoot, the triple threat, black, lesbian, woman. The lawsuit was, again, this was first reported by Greg Pratt over at the Chicago Tribune. A former Park District attorney is suing the city, alleging that Mayor Lori Lightfoot, again, under 5'2", black, lesbian, woman, berates her staff in obscene terms. And this particular incident was in regards to the Columbus statue, which I've written about, and it's a big conversation piece, which, you know, to explain to outsiders exactly what's happening with the Columbus statues in Chicago, it's going to take a while, so just go ahead and visit chicagojournal.com and look up one of my articles from, I think it was 2020, when all this was primarily happening. But we need to talk about what she said, and for posterity's sake, for our children's children, we need to make sure that history has her words so we can always look back on them in awe at our betters, our leaders. So she reportedly said this on a Zoom call, and this is considered, I guess, primary evidence in the lawsuit against the city that the mayor berates and defames the plaintiffs. Okay, so this is what is quoted in the report. and we presume that somebody recorded this Zoom call, this conference call. So we're expecting to see the recording at some point and or hear it. I'm not going to try and do a Lori Lightfoot impression. I do not have a good Lori Lightfoot impression. I do some decent impressions, but I just can't get Lori Lightfoot. I'm not very good at it, so I'm not gonna try it. But what sometimes happens with this type of language is a little bit of an accent comes out in me, and you may hear that. So again, Mayor Lori Lightfoot on a Zoom call with Chicago Park District General Counsel discussing the Columbus statue. Here we go, Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Quote. You dicks. What the fuck were you thinking? You make some kind of secret agreement with the Italians? What are you doing? You're out there measuring your dicks with the Italians, seeing who's got the biggest dick? You're out there stroking your dicks over the Columbus statue? I'm trying to keep Chicago police officers from being shot, and you're trying to get them shot. My dick is bigger than yours and the Italians. I have the biggest dick in Chicago. Where did you go to law school? Did you even go to law school? Do you even have a law license? You have to submit any pleadings to John Hendricks for approval before filing. John told you not to do a fucking thing with that statue without my approval. Now get that fucking statue back before noon tomorrow, or I'm going to have you fucking fired. Okay, so, all right, yes, that is again. To be clear, that is the black lesbian woman mayor of Chicago, who is all but 5 foot 2 inches tall. That is not Joey Lombardo. That is not Paul Rica. That is not Capone himself. That is not Big Bill Thompson. That is not Daley. That is not Rahm Emanuel. That is not Blagojevich. That is Mayor Lori Lightfoot. It's beautiful. It really is. It's absolutely beautiful. I'll say the one thing about being from here and writing and stuff and about here is the city is no shortage of absolutely beautiful quotes. That it's just a beautiful, beautiful quotes. I got to be honest, though. I don't know if it's an all-timer. I mean, it's definitely one of Lori Lightfoot's all-timers. I mean, that's going to go in her personal Hall of Fame. But is it a all-time? I don't know. I'm going to have to do a deep dive on that. And that actually is a good idea for a feature because it may be up there. I've got to do a little bit more thinking about it. I mean, Rahm, at least the closest ones. So Rahm had Never Let a Good Crisis Go to Waste. That's probably an all-timer. I got to be honest. That is so many different applications, and it's just so succinct and good and just perfect. It's a perfect encapsulation of the Democratic, Illinois Democrat machine. And you can't sum up what those guys, just that type of person, any better than that quote. Blagojevich, of course. I got this thing, and it's fucking golden. That's great. That one's probably an all-timer also, now that I think about it. I mean, I've got this thing, this fucking golden is just, man, that's a hell of a political quote too. We really have had some all-timers lately. Like I say, I'm going to have to do a deep dive on this, but I have the biggest dick in Chicago, said by a 5'2" black lesbian woman mayor, is, it's really good. It's really good. It's really, really good. I'm definitely doing an article on it. I'm going to do a commentary on it. And I'm thinking about going back to what Royko, doing a Royko-esque type of thing where he was talking about when was it? It was the early 70s. I want to say it was Shoot, I don't remember. I'm sorry. It was in the early 70s. Maybe like 73? I don't remember the exact year. I don't remember the exact time, but Boss Daily. This was towards the... I don't remember. All right, I'm just quick trying. It was early 70s, Boss Daily, when he told everybody to kiss his ass, or they can kiss my ass. Roy Coe did this awesome, really cool column. And I think he titled it, What's Behind Daily's Comments, I think is what it was. And he talked about the Blarney Stone, you know, making Daily's ass, Boss Daily's ass, a tourist attraction, coming to kiss his ass. And it's a really good piece. So I think I'm going to have to do something for Mayor Lightfoot's comments. It's a great quote. Just in the context and coming from that person, it's a great quote. Again, I don't know if it's an all-timer. I do not know, because we all know what she was trying to do, but I don't know. It's really good. It is really good. I mean, it was good enough to almost steal the headlines from the federal indictment of Michael Joseph Madigan. It caught everybody in our meme culture, our social media culture, and it's a good quote. So make sure you guys keep that for posterity. Put that away somewhere, and we'll put that in a time capsule. And hopefully in a few hundred years, when we're all colonizing Mars, we can revisit. All right. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is obviously what everybody's talking about this last week. And that's the federal indictment of Mike Madigan. When I first heard the news, I thought I would have more to say. But the truth is, there's not much left to say. The news is that the indictment even happened at all. We're talking about a man who has been a part of this state government for 50 years. Anyone and everyone, certainly from Illinois, but possibly the Midwest, knows the rumors, the smirks, the innuendos about what goes on behind his closed doors. He wasn't shy about it. He openly admitted it in interviews, and I'm going to get to some of that later. But you go back and through history, and you see it's not exactly quiet what he and his cronies did. This indictment says more about the people of the state of Illinois than it does. I take that back. This indictment needed to happen, even if it's only symbolic. I mean, I think you're naive if you think he's going to jail. You should have kicked him out a long time ago. And you should be ashamed. And this is another thing, too, I'm going to get into later. We all joke about the corruption. We all joke about that's just the way business is done here. That's the Chicago way. It's the Illinois way. We laugh it off. We joke about it at parties. At some point, it's you. It's me. It's us that are the problem. You're going to have to admit it. If Madigan's indictment isn't the one that does it, I truly don't think there is. I don't think there's one out there left that could actually convince the Illinois voter that it's time to reconsider what's been happening here. It's time to reevaluate where we're going to go in the future, and it's time to rethink what we've been doing around here for a long, long time. But again, I'm not going to dwell on the indictment itself too much, because we're in for a long haul here. It's going to be a long, many months, probably years. We've still got 8 months to the election. It's going to be at the tip of everybody's tongue, on the top of everybody's heads. It's going to be constant. So we're not going to completely go into everything right now. I am going to, though, reread you and rediscuss a piece I published on August 13th, 2020, right on the Chicago Journal at chicagojournal.com. You can find it. It's called Madigan's Magical Mystery Machine. And it goes into a little bit of details. There are a couple of things that I wish I could redo. Namely, I had somebody send me an email once about how Madigan, I compared Madigan's war chest, his money to other United States senators and things like that. And obviously I wasn't clear at the time, or clear enough at the time, that Madigan obviously wouldn't spend all that money on his reelection campaign. It was just a theoretical, and I included the word theoretical, I believe. He could if he wanted to, and that was the point of contention between this individual and I. So there are a couple of things I wish I could go back and clarify, but I still wanted to reread it, get it out there, because there's going to be a lot, certainly over the next 10 months, but probably years, while this trial continues on and on and on. And get ready for the long haul, because you got a long road ahead with this story, and there's going to be a lot that comes out and a lot to talk about. But I give John Lausch a little bit of credit for, well, I'll say it, for having the balls to do it. I didn't think that they were going to do it. I truly didn't. I thought they would all shy away from it, back out. And whether or not there's an ultimate conviction, whether or not there's any significant consequences for the guy, I do give him a little bit of credit for having the balls to do it. I'm surprised, that's for sure. But I give him a little bit of credit, even if nothing comes of it. All right. Without further ado, we're going to go back to August 13th of 2020 to an opinion and comment piece that I wrote, again, titled Madigan's Magical Mystery Machine. As always, thanks for listening. Check us out at chicagojournal.com and come back and visit the podcast here in the near future. Thanks. Some say that if you turn off the lights, light a candle, and whisper his name 3 times in a mirror, he'll appear. Madigan. 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 3 syllables that dance 3 times 3 steps from the front to the back of the palate. From the pursed lips to a tap of the tongue on the top, to a soft growl at the back of the throat. I hope Nabokov would be proud. It's further said that the wind will howl and the candle will snuff out, and suddenly you feel it. His presence. If only it were that easy for every Illinois voter to gain an audience with the venerable speaker. Now, I admit that opening is a bit much, and yet, try as he has to avoid it. Since Boss Daley, there's simply no other politician in this city, in this state, who has come as close as Mike Madigan has to turning himself into the type of politician seen in grand literary fiction. The type of public figure whose legend and mythos and apocrypha precedes him in any discussion and negotiation. And I suspect that's been his goal the entire time. In the beginning, on January 13, 1971, a fresh-faced 28-year-old lawyer named Michael Joseph Madigan Jr. assumed office as a member of the Illinois House of Representatives serving the 22nd District of Chicago's 13th Ward. Today, 49 years, 7 months, and 1 day later, he's still there. That's 18,111 days. If you prefer, it's also 1,564,790,400 seconds, or 26,079,840 minutes, or 434,664 hours that Mike Madigan has been an elected Illinois government official. Now remember, those are numbers from when this was published on August 13th, 2020. and I'm recording this podcast the weekend of, or the first weekend in March of 2022. So it's still a little bit longer when he has been the well-known speaker, we'll say that. Mike Madigan is, or was, the longest-serving speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives in state history, having presided over 17 general assemblies. In fact, Madigan is the longest-serving state House speaker in the history of the United States. Since he first took office in January of 71, he saw 9 Illinois governors and 8 Chicago mayors come and go. He managed to see his name published and broadcast victorious on election night 21 times consecutively. Since he was named Speaker of the Illinois House in 1983, the Democrat Party has held a majority all but 2 of his 37 years. Now, again, that was 2 years ago, so 39 years. Time and time again, even as he's seen his ward go from an over 95% white population in 1980 to an approximate 75% Hispanic majority in 2019, Madigan wins. It's truly impressive. Nay, truly awe-inspiring numbers for a local kid from the Southwest Side. Without question, he's the most powerful man in Illinois politics. If we were to compare him in a strictly local to Illinois political sense, he's quite possibly the most powerful politician this state has ever seen. And that's arguable, of course, but it is, it is arguable. But that is not enough perspective to outline just how ingrained and embedded Mike Madigan is with our modern Illinois. While Mike Madigan first took office in 1971, his initial entry into governance came 2 years earlier when he was made the 13th Ward Committeeman. He was the youngest committeeman at the time. And by 1968, the calls for a new Illinois Constitutional Convention had reached their zenith. The Illinois Constitution had not been rewritten at that time for nearly 100 years, and it was decided that it was time to update state laws with a more modern taxing system, a better way to redistrict legislative districts, a legislature that met annually, and more power for the governor. Madigan was subsequently elected as a delegate to this 6th Constitutional Convention from the 27th District, along with people like young Richie Daley, son to the aforementioned Boss Daley. See, Madigan and the others have been there from the ostensible foundation. He essentially helped write the conscience of our current state government and helped bring forth its soul from the ancient ether. And if you don't believe me, take it from the man himself. During the 1987 Illinois Constitutional Review, Madigan said, "My hopes in 1969 and 1970 have been fulfilled every day that I've served in the General Assembly because every day, every issue, every bill, every amendment, in one way or another, relates to the Constitution and relates to the deliberations that were conducted at that time." Now again, that was 1987. The 1969 Illinois Constitutional Convention was informally called the ConCon for obvious reasons. And that's how it's derisively referenced today, as it is the most, or as it is the direct source of much of the state's financial woes. At the time, the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune, perhaps prophetically, warned, "A constitutional convention is not a place for cranks and crackpots. It is also not a place to send party hacks as a reward for faithful work in the precincts." Now, the earnest naivete from the Tribune is cute, but this is Illinois, after all. Now, in his own words, from a 1986 interview with Chicago Magazine, Madigan's father, Michael J. Madigan Sr., was a very strong Democrat. He was a product of the Depression. He carried with him very strong feelings in favor of many of the enactments of the New Deal. Madigan Sr. worked as an assistant for Cook County Clerk Michael J. Flynn and as a precinct captain of the 13th Ward also. He later worked for 25 years as the 13th Ward Superintendent for the City of Chicago Department of Streets and Sands, Streets and Sanitation. Now, also in that 1986 interview, Madigan mentioned that he was trying to find a job for the unemployed brother-in-law of a lawmaker. Asked why he was doing that, he replied, "Because it's the correct thing for me to do in terms of maintaining a good relationship with the legislator. which builds my strength as a speaker and the Democratic leader. That's a public interview. You can literally go Google it and find it. But again, it's from 1986, Chicago Magazine, 1986. It's linked on the article here that I posted on the website at chicagojournal.com. And yet, that is still not enough to detail just how omnipresent Mike Madigan's eye watches over the state, or just how thorough his reach pervades and seeps into his halls of power, or just how old school this whole process really was, and the way they thought it was okay to behave, and how corruption is through the entire institution, I guess, is what we're trying to say. Over the years, Madigan controlled four general election funds. All the numbers I'm going to give you are from the fourth quarter 2019 election finance reports at the Illinois State Board of Elections. Madigan was in charge of distributing the following campaign cash at that time. The Friends of Michael J. Madigan, they had total cash on hand just under $11.5 million. The Democratic Party of Illinois had total cash on hand just under $2.2 million. The 13th Ward Democratic Organization had just under $2.5 million cash on hand. The Democratic Majority, just over $5 million cash on hand. And again, those are the four main general election funds that Madigan controlled. To repeat them, the Friends of Michael J. Madigan, Democratic Party of Illinois, 13th Ward Democratic Organization, and the Democratic Majority. Essentially, outside of a snap of his fingers and phone calls made to overeagle political lapdog donors to raise even more money, he had over $21 million cash on hand that he was in charge of distributing toward Illinois state politics. To understand that number and give some better perspective, we have to look back to 2018 and some of the bigger names in politics for comparison's sake. We're not counting presidential or gubernatorials. So Paul Ryan, at the time, former vice presidential candidate and former Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, in his last election near 2018, held $5.8 million cash on hand. When Elizabeth Warren was running for the United States Senate in 2018, she had just over $11 million cash on hand. Chuck Schumer of New York in 2016, he had just under $9.5 million cash on hand. The Republican on that list with the highest number was John Thune of South Dakota, and Thune had just over $11.5 million cash on hand. So I want you to review. In his local Illinois House of Representatives seat overseeing the 13th Ward, Madigan controlled nearly double the number that candidates running for the United States Senate seat controlled. Now, does all that money go to his campaigns directly? No. But Madigan's district held a little more than 57,000 registered voters. Okay, so of those 57,000 residents in that same 2018 election, only 18,000 even bothered to cast a vote. Of those 18,000 votes, Madigan ran unopposed and received 12,600 votes. If he wanted, he could have spent that $1,666 that Madigan could theoretically spend per vote, all while Chuck Schumer, running for United States Senator of New York State, for comparison, Chuck received $4,784,218 votes. So he could have theoretically spent a little less than $2 per vote, while Mike Madigan could have spent $1,666 per vote to win his election and continue his speakership of the Illinois House. I mean, when you really stop to consider the numbers, you cannot help but be awed in a certain sense, in a certain sensibility. Perspective is probably the better word. Now, maybe it wouldn't be so awesome if there were some sort of, well, anything that Mike Madigan is particularly noted for, other than his complete and total domination of Illinois elected office. Other than maintaining power and control over his protectorate, surely Madigan has some great and, noble cause. Other than himself, is his name synonymous with some particular moral tale or noteworthy clarion call? I mean, who or what is he a great champion of? The Democratic Party of Illinois, the 22nd District, kitty cats, puppy dogs? It's strange, isn't it? As a lifelong resident of this region and state, I'm unable to think of a single issue that Mike Madigan's ever taken or hung on his mantle. Hung on his mantle. Can you? I doubt it. Now I know the counter-argument would be made that due to his incredible reign, there are simply too many to count. Still, there's not one major issue that jumps out. Nothing that really pops, you know, nothing that you can think of or I can think of that says, Mike Madigan did that. Nothing to remind anyone that that's Mike Madigan's legacy. I mean, I can't help but think that length of service, staying power, a lifetime in governance should give some indicator of sustained accomplishments and successes. You know, titles and time don't equate to results, but surely there must be significant substance to outline. No? Now, I mean, don't misunderstand me either. I'm no ageist. Age has no bearing on historical impact, of course, and I doubt the Declaration of Independence would have been the same or would have had the same punch without 70-year-old Benjamin Franklin's editor's pen crossing out and revising some of the 33-year-old Thomas Jefferson's lines. And I wonder how France would look today had a 17-year-old maid of Orleans been dismissed as a silly girl. You know, nor does length and notoriety or level of fame have outsized bearing on historical impact, but for political comparison's sake, if I were being generous, you know, Julius Caesar's entire political career totaled somewhere between 25 to 30 years, depending on when you want to start the clock, carried through the famous or the infamous Ides of March. Abraham Lincoln held political office for a grand total of 30 years, 8 months, and 14 days, excluding the tragic end date where he was killed. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, famously elected U.S. president 4 times, had an entire political career that spanned 34 years, 3 months, and 12 days. The great Alexander of Macedon could have been born, conquered his 2 million square mile empire in which he founded over 70 cities, died, been born again, tamed Bucephalus again, finished his studies with Aristotle again, and would have been on the precipice of becoming king once more in the same historical span of time that Mike Madigan was or had been in office. No, I'm not an ageist, okay? After all, you know, when I was writing this back in 2020, Madigan still had a ways to go to compete with someone like Winston Churchill, who spent 55 total years in government. Madigan had a ways to go before he caught the likes of John Dingell of Michigan, Robert Byrd of West Virginia, or Carl Hayden of Arizona. But who's counting? And yet, I'm still not done outlining just how deep Mike Madigan ran in Illinois. To expand, elocute, and enunciate his accomplishments even further, during Madigan's remarkable reign, Illinois pension obligations are on pace to close near $140 billion by the end of 2020. I'm sorry, $139 billion by the end of 2020. That number, which is nothing short of obscene, is protected under Article 13, Section 5 of the 1970 Illinois Constitution, where it's written, membership in any pension or retirement system of the state, any unit of local government or school district, or any agency or instrumentality thereof, shall be an enforceable contractual relationship, the benefits of which shall not be diminished or impaired. Now, I'm not going to go into the minutiae and the fine print of the Illinois pension crisis. I'm not an investigator. I've never been good at math. I'm not going to even touch the law firm of Madigan and Getzendanner and, you know, specializing in property tax appeals where Madigan has made millions upon millions of dollars helping individuals and corporations navigate, quote unquote, the intricacies, quote unquote, of Illinois property tax law. Plenty of better funded and more well-known outlets than this one have reviewed both issues over and over and over and time again. The easiest way to say all this is if you're a working person in Illinois over the age of 16, you owe a lot of money. Your money. Money that you earned and money you haven't earned yet. So do your children, actually. Your money and your children's money that either Mike Madigan directly or the people he's allowed to wield in an iota of power beneath him has spent your entire lifetime spending for you before it even hit your pocket. But that's not all. Mike Madigan has managed to accomplish all this wonderful accolades and accumulate all his illustrious titles and extraordinary records while Illinois faces an exodus not just of its population, but of its businesses. Last year, the Chicago metro area had the worst net out-migration of all Midwestern cities, and the state of Illinois has been losing population for 6 years straight since 2014, and now, here in 2022, that is up to 8 years straight, and we just actually this last year experienced our worst out-migration. I think we've ever had, ever on the books. At the start of 2020, but though, Chicago's population was now almost the exact same as it was back in the 1920s. For comparison purposes, New York City, another American city, granted that is also losing population, but they gained approximately a little over 2.7 million people in that same time span. So 1920 to 2020, 100 years. New York City gained 2.7-something million people while Chicago stayed flat. Though Madigan is currently in charge of the machine, he can't possibly be blamed for anything regarding population, right? Well, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, whose statistics available to me go back to 1976, at the close of January that year, there were 5,133,491 Illinois citizens who were participating in the labor force. That number rose steadily through the end of October 1999. At the end of October in 1999, Illinois had a labor force participation rate of 6,503,998 people. And at the end of October in 2019, that same figure was 6,505,066 people. So for 20 years of net zero growth in the state of Illinois. Now I suppose it's mere coincidence that the Illinois Democrat Party's Central Committee elected Mike Madigan to the chair of the Democrat Party of Illinois in April 1998, where every elected Democrat official has to go through him and get his permission. Madigan fired the state party staff, closed its headquarters in the Merchandise Mart in Chicago, moved it to Springfield, to the same office building as his campaign finance committee staff, and Madigan really began to turn the screws. Now, is growth the sole indicator of productivity and wealth creation? No, but it does tell us something. More and more people are going elsewhere to find their optimistic futures, and less looking toward Illinois. Why? Because their wealth and productivity and standard of living is not growing. Still, without us even touching on any of the scandals or accusations and allegations that have plagued his tenure, Madigan remains. Well, at least until this last week. Even when, of any state in this union, Illinoisans are least confident in their state government, the man who controls the whole show remains. I mean, how? How has he done it? Now, I joked here in 2020 that there was only one conclusion, that Mike Madigan has some sort of magical mystery machine. I know he didn't invent this machine, and I'm not exactly sure why he was given access to this machine, but this machine must exist somewhere, someplace. Behind a concert poster and graffiti-covered door in the back alley off of Damon Avenue, it must be there, in a room marked closet. In some quiet corridor in the Daily Center or Chicago City Hall, it must be there. After the toilets are flushed in some pre-programmed sequence in the basement bathroom in the Illinois House of Representatives in Springfield, it must be there. Is it possible Madigan's magical mystery machine is mobile, packed tight into the back of some nondescript windowless white van endlessly driving the streets of the state? Maybe an even larger semi-trailer, its air dam rising above the tassels, stalking like a shark fin splitting the surface of Illinois' oceanic cornfields. We're going to need a bigger boat. All right, now I'm being facetious. Let's get to the point. Now again, keep this perspective that I'm writing this in 2020. This is prior to all of the things that have happened this last week. Many outlets have decried and declared the death of Chicago's machine politics for as long as I can remember, and those same cries have recently reached a fever pitch. The previous references are from a lazy Google search, but there can be found many, many more. I mean, is this the end? Will the recent ComEd patronage scandal, his most in flagrante delicto scandal to date, and his hubris finally consume Boss Madigan and take him and the machine down for good? I'm not holding my breath. As late as January of 2020, after the ComEd scandal story had been breaking for months, Madigan still managed to carve out an extra $10 million for his tiny 13th ward from Governor J.B. Pritzker's huge new $45 billion capital program budget. Every other ward, they were asked to submit proposals up to $3 million. No, I don't think Mike Madigan is going anywhere. Because here in 2022 is the same as 2020. He does not care about legacy. He has none. The only thing his name is now synonymous with is corruption. I'd add incompetence, but that requires a much longer conversation. His name is a vulgar word on the tongues of an enormous segment of the current and rapidly growing former Illinois population. If he had walked away years ago, maybe even had he taken on more of an advisor role and affected a softer disposition toward his electorate, at least for the media cameras, he could have salvaged a morsel of respect, maybe. But now? Now it's almost sad. He's like Brooks at the end of The Shawshank Redemption. He no longer has any understanding or personal agency to survive in the outside world. He sans Illinois politics and the protection of the great democratic walls he's gerrymandered and drawn around himself, quite literally, and spent his entire life maintaining, he's just lost. But he was most certainly here. But the machine, this whole machine, can't be satisfying anymore, can it? At 78 years old in 2020, but 79 going on 80 in 2022, he desires nothing more? I mean, we can touch on all the details of his life since he was a young lawyer, but perhaps the most damning observation of the character of Mike Madigan has always been his treatment of his daughter Lisa Madigan's career. Shortly after he took control of the Illinois Democratic Party in the late 1990s, Mike Madigan spent an extraordinary sum getting Lisa elected an Illinois Attorney General. That exorbitant sum was a scandal in and of itself, outside of the fact that the wheelings and dealings of the most powerful man in Illinois politics were now under the jurisdiction of and investigatory powers of his own daughter. I mean, never mind that. After she'd dutifully put in the years in service to her father, it's long been rumored that Lisa wanted to run for governor, but she felt that the electorate would not consider her unless dear old dad was out of office. At that time, he'd been in office 43 years and he was 72 years old. She asked. He said no. So when I heard that, despite growing calls for his resignation in the face of the ComEd patronage scandal in 2020, he once again utterly refused to leave, well, you can't help but laugh. His own daughter is a mere cog. Why would anyone expect this farce to end now? No, I don't think Mike Madigan is going anywhere. In another article I've already linked, one Republican legislator once said, "This is his oxygen. He can't give it up." Jim Sasha, a former Republican legislator from Freeport who served six terms, added that his addiction to winning and power is his Achilles heel. Well, the great Achilles, undefeated in battle, was struck at his weakest point and fell all the same. As Madigan will, as we all will, eventually. Political metaphor speaking, of course. And perhaps it will prove prophetic then that the people of Chicago, the once upon a time self-coined Paris on the prairie, that will be Madigan's political downfall. You may remember that Paris, by all accounts, was a coward who was never given credit for his errant arrow that was always referenced either as a mistake or guided by Apollo. But, unfortunately, that came after Achilles' fabled wrath had wreaked its havoc. As I sit here in 2022, I think about the conclusion that I wrote in 2020 to this. And if I'm being honest with you, it stays the same. The truth is, there is no machine. There never has been one. The machine in this town is like a ghost or a specter, a phantom apparition, ever present and all around us. A haunting. The truth is, it's an excuse. It's a facade. It's artifice. It's theater of the mind. Madigan and his cronies could have been stopped at any time over the course of the last 50 years with even a modicum or an iota of will from its citizens, but the Illinois opposition would rather hide behind the excuse called the machine. It's an excuse that provides an easy out and shields them from the ugliness of their ignorance and apathy. 50 years. 5 decades. Go all the way back to Anton Cermak, if you wish. The fact that there hasn't been some sort of natural revolution in this state is remarkable. Because Illinoisans do not live in a failing state, they live in a failed state that just won't admit it yet. They live as enablers to all deeds done behind the cover of Mike Madigan and his magical mystery machine. The citizens of Illinois' futures and their children's futures have been stolen from them. Stolen from them in the same way a common organized crime boss steals from his community. And they let them do it. Now, don't worry, I'm also an Illinois citizen, and I have been my whole life, so I'm staring directly in the mirror when I say this. I'd relate a current metaphor, or I'd relate a metaphor to the current events in Chicago, but it's also tiresome. Madigan's great power and influence comes from you, the citizen of Illinois. It comes from you, the voter. It comes from the 12,000 people in his district who continue to send him to office to play silent tyrant and velvet hammer to the rest of the state while he keeps the trains running and the garbage picked up. It comes from you, the people of this state who continue to elect his cronies and his lackeys and his hangers-on and his minions to mortgage your children's 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 future. It comes from you, the Illinois voter, who continues to elect his doormats or refuse to get involved and or make your discontents known. After all, you can just escape to parts unknown, right? Who hasn't been privy to the following conversation? Oh, we just bought a place in insert neighboring state here. A woman tells the group. We're right behind you, another man says. Wait for us, another replies. You can visit us in Arizona, comes a cry from across the room. We just put an offer on a house in Florida, came another from the opposite wall. Hey, women and children and lifeboats first. Ha ha ha, all laughed. See, maybe Illinois voters could be forgiven if this were some sort of grift. A brief, small-scale swindle. Maybe they could be forgiven if Madigan and his lackeys were some sort of mid-level band struggling with their own limitations and the harsh face of stardom. Maybe if the Republican Party in the state of Illinois, particularly its leadership, were a little more than legislative concubines, the Illinois voter boy, Illinois voter could be granted clemency. Had it not been completely and utterly spineless and mismanaged throughout his tenure, the Illinois voter might be exonerated. Now, I'm unable to think of a more poignant quote than that which comes from Montesquieu and his Spirit of the Laws, published in 1748. He writes, "The tyranny of a prince in an oligarchy is not so dangerous to the public welfare as the apathy of a citizen in a democracy." Now imagine if he had had the luck to witness and live under both at the same time. Welcome to Mike Madigan's Illinois.